Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. I have a great interview with a senior product manager for software products. This podcast is brought to you by Product Innovation Educators, which is where I and my colleagues provide online training for product managers and innovators. To see the show notes for this episode, please go to theeverydayinnovator.com/036. Enjoy the interview. My guest has a long list of skills and experiences as a seasoned product manager, including leading teams, roadmap planning, portfolio management, lean startup, customer discovery, agile development, and SaaS and cloud architectures. He is a mentor at TechStars, an accelerator for technology startups. His name is Jeremy Dillingham, and he is currently serving as a senior VP at ReturnPath, a company that helps organizations promote and protect their brand. Jeremy, thanks so much for talking about product management with me and the everyday innovators who are listening.
Sure. Thanks, Chad.
Glad you're here. You started ReturnPath in 2008 as a product manager, and you've held many different product management roles there. And prior to that, you worked as a product manager in a startup, and then even prior to that, as a project manager at IBM. And I know a lot of the everyday innovators, they really like to hear how people got into product management, right? Some are trying to do that. Some are trying to figure out how to make the next step in their careers. Can you share your journey about how you got involved with product management?
Sure. I mean, I think everyone gets into product management in different ways. There's no necessarily super easy cookie cutter way to get into the profession. Mm-hmm. But I was a project manager at IBM. And project management, of course, is an important skill set for a product manager, even though they're very different roles. And I had just completed my MBA at CU and got the job at the startup. And at the time, we didn't know it, but myself and another woman who were hired, both with MBAs, both with project management backgrounds, and they literally wanted product managers but hired project managers, and then just pulled us into an office about 3 weeks into the job and said, okay, you're no longer project managers, you're product managers. And that's how I got into product management.
So you were in the right place at the right time.
Totally.
I do think a lot of people are in project management roles. They're actually doing a lot of product management, right? And the way that PMI defines project management is, you know, it's a project that creates a product or service. I know that's how I got started too. Was any of your prior experience as a project manager related to product development in some way?
You know, a little bit. It was around running, you know, kind of incremental software upgrades and enhancements on a project basis. So it was in some ways similar. I think the most important aspect of that experience that I took into product management was the ability to, you know, have the skills to manage a team, to manage to deadlines, and to help really, you know, set up, organize the work, and do all the project management pieces. But, you know, adding on the layer of discovery and making decisions and really helping guide the team versus just kind of, you know, manage the project. But
right. So in the discovery part, are you talking about, like, you know, how do we even figure out what the concept should be for the product, what the requirements are?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way I describe the difference between project and product management, because people get confused over time, is that a project manager is accountable and they're responsible, but they don't have any of the authority. And the thing I love about product is that you get that authority. So not only are you the CEO of the product, as a lot of people like to say, or as we talk about it at ReturnPath, you're the single ringable neck if there's a if there's an issue, but you're the person that also gets to, through the, you know, broader team, but you're the one person that ultimately gets to make the decisions and based on data and based on the market, but you get to make the decisions and ensure that you're doing the right things. And so that's why, for me, it's a much, much more interesting role. If you're going to be responsible and accountable, you might as well be able to shape it and make the decisions.
Yeah, I have a lot more ownership. Exactly. And one distinction there you talked about was, and maybe I said the requirements part, you know, the you use the word discovery. As a project manager, most of the time we walk into a project already having a kind of certainly the scope of work and the requirements kind of framed out, maybe some more planning work to do around that. As a product manager, if we're on the front end of that, you have to figure out what it is this product's going to be about, right? And how do we provide value to our customers?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm curious also, as you made that transition, you know, at the startup and now at ReturnPath, another aspect of product management is, you know, kind of opening this world to all the other functions of the organization, right? And not just being focused on a project, but kind of everything else going on. And I don't know if you saw that much in the startup. I'm sure you wore every hat there was to wear pretty much, right? Did you see this more cross-functional activity going on as a product manager?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the transition for me from IBM, which everything is incredibly siloed just because of the size of the organization, to the startup was a big change. Mm-hmm. I think it was pretty similar at the time from the startup to ReturnPath, because, you know, the startup had gotten up to 50 people at one point. And when I started at ReturnPath, it was less than 150 people. So the scale wasn't that different. But yeah, you know, the way I often will draw it out for people who in our organization are wondering how to work with product management is it's kind of the hub and spoke with PM at the center and then all the different organizations within the company kind of attach that spoke. So product works closely with, you know, not only engineering and UX, which is kind of the core team in product development here at ReturnPath, but also closely aligned with marketing and support, analytics, et cetera.
Right. Yeah. And maybe, you know, manufacturing operation if it was another company developing real exactly. Physical products.
Yeah.
And one more question about this transition. I'm curious, you did the MBA work in that and then went to the startup. And there's probably some of the innovators wondering about that MBA piece. Did you feel that was really essential to you doing the product management work, or was it more coincidental?
I think it was essential for me to get the job, but caveat emptor, everyone's got their own path. You know, for me, mm-hmm. I think it was important that for the startup to have two MBAs with project management experience, but I don't know that that would help anyone else ever get a job. The thing that I think is the most interesting in applying it to product management is that whole piece around business acumen. So it's, you know, the whether you have that experience or not, if you don't have it, an MBA is an interesting way to get it and then to prove that you have it. But it's about helping not only the engineering team, but also yourself and the other stakeholders that are part of that team, connect what you're doing, connect the value to customers in the market to the overall business impact or business results that you're trying to drive. And so I think it was valuable for me from that standpoint.
Yep. And be able to connect those pieces and connect the people involved too.
Exactly. You know, not every engineer is going to understand why they're doing the work that they need to do. And I think an important piece of a product manager's job is providing that context and helping connect them to the strategy and the business results. So they know it's not just about doing the work, but understanding why and really giving it your all because you believe in it.
Right. And as you said, you're the owner of the outcome. So giving it all is pretty important.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. Thanks for sharing your journey a little bit. And I want to talk about your role there at ReturnPath. I saw on your LinkedIn profile that when you got there, you helped lead the creation of the first new product the company had in 4 years. And that's actually not uncommon for a lot of companies that, you know, they develop a product and it's their flagship and it's what they how they bring in revenue. And over time, people turn over and the company is, you know, they don't really know how to create a product anymore. I don't know if that was the case at ReturnPath or not. I just kind of like to explore what was going on there and what you learned out about that experience.
Yeah, so we're an enterprise SaaS company and we had built two products that are part of an important suite that did amazingly well. And we were in this period of time, which was perfect for us because the business environment late 2008 through 2009 through 2010, if people can remember, was, you know, the recession. It was pretty bad and a lot of companies
painful.
A lot of companies went out of business. But our business was actually growing really well during that time period. And we were profitable and it was a great company to join and a great time to join it. But what had happened is we had spent all of our time during that downturn really scaling the business. So we were going from, you know, tens to hundreds of customers to thousands. And it was just a very difficult period of consolidating the infrastructure and getting it all working and hardened and scalable and trying to get out ahead of the growth, which is, like I said, a wonderful problem to end up having. But at the tail end of that, we didn't know how to innovate. Nobody had really brought products to market within the company in a long, long time. I mean, I think the founders were the ones that brought the original products to market. And so it was a very different environment that we suddenly found ourselves in. And it was interesting. And so, you know, this was before the lean startup was a thing. We started to read Steve Blank's book. And engage with him. We actually brought Eric Ries in when he had the blog before he had the conference and the book and the world fame. And we were trying to incorporate all these ideas from different places to understand which one of these ideas would work for us and how do we kind of start that process. And we established a very early and crude version of our form of the kind of discovery process. Went out to market, validated ideas, and through that, you know, we worked with Marty Kagan out of California. I don't know if anybody has read his book or worked with him, but I highly recommend it. And we started kind of getting into our groove of bringing products to market. And you know, it took us a year to bring our first new product to market, and we were really proud of that. And everybody who was an expert at doing this thought that was just horrible. It took way too long. And so, you know, through that we learned. But as a learning organization, it was really valuable for us to kind of continually revisit what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And so it was a great experience for me to learn not only new skills, but how do you kind of evolve that and get to a place where as we started scaling the team, we could bring people in, you know, with we've already had all this experience. Now how do we teach people from this point forward so that, you know, they don't have to revisit the bad things that we did.
Absolutely. And given that it was the environment that you did not know how to create products, you know, that was a big accomplishment, even if it took longer than maybe you'd liked.
We felt it was at the time. You know, it's funny with how much product management has kind of evolved. I actually think the arc over the last 10 years has been really interesting, but in particular the last five, there's just so much better ways to do product management now than there were. And so much more kind of learning out in the world that it's gotten a lot better and everyone seems to be a lot faster at it and kind of learn lessons learned and shared it. So It's a really interesting time to be doing product management, I think.
Yeah, I'm really glad to see kind of the renewed focus on like customer discovery, Steve Blank's work and that led to Lean Startup, on making sure you get out of the office and talk to the customer and engage the customer and do ethnography and know what actually provides value before you get too much sucked into developing. And that hasn't been our historical experience, especially in large companies, right? That the kind of the product wheel just keeps churning. And there's product managers that never talk to customers, which is kind of shocking.
It is to me, because it's so much easier to just talk to customers and learn.
Right. And what was the catalyst there that brought all that about? Was it a desire to grow the company? Was it something taking place in the environment that said, you know, we need a different product?
Yeah, I mean, it was a combination of things. I think that initial product was both, look, we finally got out ahead of the growth and we can predict what's going to happen and then we know the infrastructure is going to scale. We should do something else. And then also a combination of competitive pressures. The main competitor in the space was starting to really evolve and bring out some new ideas to market. And we wanted to initially match that and get to a cadence where we could outperform, which is actually what happened, but it took us a while to get there.
Yeah, and nothing like customers changing and a little competitive pressure to relook at what's important and where the focus should
be. Yeah, a strong competitor can actually help.
Absolutely. I you know, otherwise we kind of get lazy, I think, over time. So
a little bit, yeah.
Healthy for organizations and good for the customer. Good. How about a more recent example? I always like to dive into, you know, a real product project and talk about what you learned from that. And a lot of the time, you know, the things that we learn from those real experiences are not necessarily what went right, but maybe the things that went wrong along the way and we learned from that. Do you have a more recent experience that you can share?
Sure. So there's actually two. There's a one that I wasn't necessarily super involved in, but I can talk about it from the perspective of the company and how product kind of functioned there that was a success. And then 2 years ago, we had a one that I would consider more of a failure. And I can talk about both and kind of juxtapose those two experiences together.
Sounds perfect.
But, you know, we kind of, if there's another book that I recommend called Escape Velocity by Jeffrey Moore that talks about a framework for how you think about new products and new businesses within a broader organization. And he has this concept of, H1, H2, and H3, where H1 is kind of your bulk of your revenue, your study product, and then H3 is the new emerging kind of innovation that you're trying to do. It's not going to materially impact revenue this year, maybe not even next year, but it's going to be 10% of your revenue 3 years from now or more. And so both of these products would be classified in H3.
Okay, so you're taking some bets on where you think the trends were going and hoping that you're going to be in the right place in 2 or 3 years.
Well, yeah, you're thinking we're developing a new product. It doesn't need to be a 100 million product tomorrow. We're going to work on, you know, kind of the R&D innovation of it, and then you move it to H2 where it's a fledgling business or fledgling product that you're going to, you know, help grow and get off the ground, and then it moves to H1 where it's part of your ongoing, you know, core business. And so for us, the product 2 years ago that was more of a failure started out well. We had lots of discovery in the market. We validated with customers. We worked very closely, product engineering and UX, to rapid prototype, iterate, get to an MVP, and get it out to market. The problem with that product ended up being that we signed 10 referenceable paying customers early on before we kind of launched it and made it big. But we skipped that intermediate phase where you're a teenager product and you're still trying to figure it out and grow. And we went straight from, hey, we've signed 10 customers to the entire sales force globally should sell it. And the mistakes that we made in that transition and the things that we learned is that those 10 initial customers weren't a like coherent, homogenous market. They were 10 customers that might be in several different verticals. And so it wasn't a coherent market. And then the pressures of taking that and making it part of the main business meant that the salespeople were trying to sell it, you hadn't necessarily figured out that whole, you know, evangelical sales process yet that Steve Blank talks about in his book. We discovered the product and we did discovery around that, but not around a repeatable sales process necessarily. And the second piece is that since those 10 customers weren't exactly alike, now they're part of revenue and you've got to make sure that they stay happy and don't churn. And so we ended up building the next versions of the product on top of all the feedback that we got, but it wasn't consistent feedback in the sense that if we had just a single vertical, we would have built more of a laser focused product that was better for that vertical. Instead, it kind of turned into a little bit of a Frankenstein. And so there was a lot for us to learn from that.
And just to dive into that just a little bit, I think this is also tempting for organizations, right? That you have this early success, you've gone through a great process you laid out, right? A lean startup kind of process of doing the discovery work, the validation, iterating that with the customer, coming up with a clean MVP. But then something, you mentioned Escape Velocity, Jeffrey Moore's original book, Crossing the Chasm, and his update a couple years ago, talks about the need to, you know, when you have a new product, you start with a clean niche. And you, as you said, you know, in one vertical where you can build some momentum and then use that momentum to take over that vertical and use that to move you into new verticals, right? And that gives you that kind of sales process that you need. It sounds like that's what you identified as missing from this experience.
Yeah, I think it's one of the two things that was missing. The other thing is that in due to the same thing, but it's that you take feedback from that market that you think is an existing market now that you've sold revenue to it. And then you build features based on that, and the product doesn't evolve in a clean way.
It becomes a product for specific customers and not a larger.
Yeah. It's kind of a mismatch. Now, juxtaposing that with the new products that I haven't been as closely involved in, but I think the team has done an amazing job with it, where we're creating a third line of business that's all about monetizing the data that we have. You know, they've started with a very iterative discovery and combination product and sales-led process. So really, you know, the culmination of everything we've learned over the years in trying to do innovation to get to a place where, you know, we were not building out big systems internally until we could validate that there was a market need, the market was a consistent, clear, clean, you know, niche, like you just said, that there was real juice behind. And then ramped it accordingly when it made sense. We're also trying to build, you know, a true MVP around clean data feeds versus trying to go out and build products on top of it until we need to go do that. So it's just a much scrappier approach, a leaner approach, and it's paying awesome dividends for us as a company. So it's kind of good to see us learning from things that we've done in the past not so well.
So the scrappier approach that's leaner is looking to be more successful. Is it also faster?
Yes, much faster.
Okay. So you're running experiments quickly, finding answers to questions, and building out these MVPs based on the data you have.
Yeah, and we're actually closing revenue faster. So we're selling earlier in the process to both test how to sell, what kind of deals we want to do, et cetera, as well as validating that there's a real need.
Are you finding that you're able to leverage a customer success to the next customer success?
Yeah, but it's interesting. You can a little bit, but sometimes you can't tell depending on the marketplace, you can't tell the new customers about the pre-existing customers. So it's not so much from, hey, here's a logo that just signed, you should sign too, but more from as we go out to talk to the next customer, you know how the process is going to go much better, and you look much more professional and buttoned up. So whereas the very first tentative sale, back and forth may take forever. They may have a million questions. You may not know exactly what to show them or the right way to talk about things. As you hone that message and you hone the process and you hone the product, you just, every time you go out to sell, it's easier and easier.
You have data really to help brands stand out, promote their brand, protect their brand. And in this niche method of working with a vertical first, you know, the questions that you would get from a financial company are going to be really different than the questions you get from a pharmaceutical company, right? But after you deal with a few financials, you really know what, you know their business, and it makes, as you were saying, I believe, makes you look more professional interacting with them because you understand the language, you got the lingo down, and you can even anticipate kind of what their needs are.
Yeah, exactly. And so in this particular business, it's not about the fraud protection end of the business. It's about selling the raw data assets that we have for people to do things like project how different brands are performing. And so in the sense that you just talked about, a financial company may want to be able to predict stock prices using the aggregated raw data that we have. And so when you're talking to that company, you like in a vertical like that, you would understand their use cases and their needs and their buying process and who to talk to from a sales side. From a product side, you would know what kind of data they need and how they want it and how to deliver it. And so it's about evolving both the sales and product at the same time with a new market like that, that when you're focused on a single niche, once you've learned how to close a sale with the first one, you get better for the second one, et cetera. And then once you've totally dominated that niche, then you go back out and relearn a new niche, a new goal, a new market, et cetera.
Exactly. And you're already ahead of the game because of all the experience you've built. Even though it's a new vertical, a lot of the things you've done will certainly be able to apply to them.
Right. And, you know, the product that worked for one vertical, it may need to be changed or tweaked or modified for the next vertical. And that's okay. You can release another product for that vertical. It's the problem is that when you combine the features from vertical two into vertical one, then you start to dilute the product.
Right. Yep. And it becomes very messy to update it when updates are needed.
It's hard to remove features.
So along your journey here as a product manager and a great experience there at Return Path, you've come across lots of tools, processes, methodologies. You know, you talked about bringing in a lean process and working on MVPs. What stands out to you as being most important in those experiences for product management to be successful?
From a methodology perspective, it's a combination of discovery and experimentation, which are very, very similar, but not necessarily completely the same. And so the distinction that I make is discovery is the process of going out, talking to customers, validating the learning. An experiment is one pass through the build, measure, learn loop as Eric Ries talks about. And so discovery might be one experiment that you run, or it may be part of a series of experiments that you run, although people kind of conflate the terms back and forth. But to me, it's that process of coming up with a hypothesis, understanding what you're trying to test, going out and learning, and then validating it or invalidating it quickly. And so going as quickly as you can through this pseudo-scientific process to get to learnings the fastest, I think, is the most helpful for product. And it's what really differentiates strong product cultures today versus weak ones.
And for the everyday innovators listening, to dive into more on that experimentation piece, go back and listen to episode 10. That would be the everydayinnovator.com/010. And that was with Ash Mariah, who wrote the second book in Eric Ries's Lean Startup series. And so he wrote a really good book on lean principles also called Running Lean. Can you give us an example of the discovery piece, how you actually do the discovery, what it means to go out and talk to customers?
Yeah, so like the discovery interview is probably the most standard kind of format for discovery. And so it may be, the way to think about it is that maybe a discovery interview may be one or more experiments that you're trying to tackle by gathering that knowledge. And so the process is writing a set of interview questions that you want to ask the different customers, putting them in an order, going out and talking to customers and showing them live data prototypes, wireframe mockups, those kinds of things, or simply if it's all qualitative, just asking them questions if you're trying to develop personas, et cetera. And then capturing all that information down and bringing it back and analyzing it. So that's the kind of mechanics of doing discovery. The pieces where I find in teams that I'm mentoring, particularly really early startup teams, is that the two common mistakes they make is they don't write down the questions beforehand, and they don't take two people out to do the discovery interviews. So it's very, very hard to have a conversation with somebody and ensure that you're capturing all the important information down so you can go back and look at it later. And so it's so much more helpful to have an interview questionnaire and then also have somebody else taking the notes for you, even if they're not a product manager or not part of the product team. And so that piece of just ensuring that you're consistent, you're getting consistent feedback, and that you're capturing it so you can evaluate it objectively later is the most helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent suggestion. So to start with a question script so you know where you're headed, and obviously these are open-ended questions and you can deviate based on what the customer gives you feedback on, but you want to make sure you have your script, the kind of that structure.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a 17-page script. You can have five questions as five bullet points down, but you will ask them in different ways, in different orders, and then you will remember what they said in a way that is going to be most helpful to you, which it actually may not be.
And I think that's also a key point about having two people, because sometimes, if one person might be caught up in taking the notes, the other person might, is asking the questions. And sometimes it's one person that observes something and it can even help guide the conversation a little bit, like if the person just does a heavy sigh, in response to something. And one person might not pick up on that, and the other person might say, what was that about? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And people have different interpretations of how excited somebody was or whether they responded positively or negatively. And that's a very helpful conflict to have to ensure that you're getting to the root of it.
Very good. So discovery and experimentation, pieces of the customer discovery and lean startup. Any other tools in there that you would recommend?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably too many to name. There's lots of different things that we use, from A/B testing to funnels to ensuring that you have dashboards and KPIs and data on the back end. Some of those things we're not perfect at yet either, so we're still kind of working through how to ensure that we've got all the right things. But if I button that all up into a single pithy thing, it would be really making sure that you have the important metrics that you need to really measure how you're doing.
And I mentioned Ash Mariah a few minutes ago. He's the one that created the Lean Canvas and has done a lot of work with that. And I saw somewhere that you had used that in the past. Is that still a tool that's involved in your mix? Do you use it to lay out new concepts?
Yep, we absolutely use Ash's Lean Canvas, although there's a couple different flavors of Canvas, from Opportunity Canvas to Lean Canvas, but that's still our preferred. Mm-hmm. And Ash is one of the few books that we have as required reading. Running Lean is required reading for any new PM when they join the team. So we're big fans of Ash.
Well, there's a good testimony, certainly. Yeah, I like that structure a lot to help really provide some meat around the thoughts of a new product concept, and not just the customers it's serving and what it answers, but really getting you to the point of thinking about the revenue feeds and the expense model and thinking of it in terms of this could be a business.
Yeah, and I think that's why he created it, and that's super helpful. Another aspect of it that is really powerful in larger organizations is that it allows people in different departments, different areas, to engage the business model and talk about it. So you can have somebody from your channels team, they don't have to read a 17-page document or understand it, and they don't have to know all the nuances of all the info that product has discovered and distilled, but they can still engage and talk about it. Sales can engage and talk about it because it's just a one page, and it's easy to update, and it's easy for people to understand. So that's another very powerful aspect of it that we like.
Excellent. Yeah, great communication tool. And Everyday Innovators, if you're not sure what we're talking about on the Lean Canvas, there's a great tutorial in the show notes in episode 10, so you can go back and look at that. So all this great experience that you've had now as product manager and as a new product manager up through senior roles, someone that's starting out as a product manager, think back on what you wish you really knew when you were first a product manager. What is it you would share with them today?
Yeah, so we actually have a new role at ReturnPath called an associate product manager role, because I really like the idea of people breaking into product management because it's so difficult to do and learn without being thrown into the fire of having to own a full product or full product suite without the experience to be able to do that. And so, the couple things that we try to do to help those brand new product managers and people brand new to the field that take that role is to not overwhelm themselves with all the details at the beginning, number one. So crafting 90-day goals and then moving from there into a very structured kind of learning so that they ramp up at a gradual pace is very important. The second piece is that the interactions with the engineering team, because you work so closely with them. And in a lot of companies that are starting to embrace Agile or struggling with that or starting to embrace Lean, most of the friction ends up being between product and engineering. So I would suggest really spending some time to understand Agile and how Agile works and why there's certain best practices in Agile that your company may or may not be using and how you can then bring those into the company to make it function better. And the third thing is there's a lot of information already out there that you don't have to relearn. So don't try to figure out how to do discovery on your own or invent Lean Canvas. Read the books, use the tools, and then adapt them to how you would best use them for yourself and for the company over time. But start there. You know, stand on the shoulders of the giants that are already out there in the field.
Very good. And I know you've there's been three books that have come up as we talked. Marty Reagan's book, and I don't remember the title of his book offhand. Do you have?
So Marty Kagan. It's K.
Oh yeah, sorry.
G-A-N. His book is called Inspired. And then the subtitle is Creating Products That Customers Love, I believe.
Very good. And I may not be remembering this book correctly then. Is Marty a professor at University of California? University of Southern California?
Marty was at I think, Netscape and then eBay.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, getting it confused with a different book. Yeah, good. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, the key thing that we learned from his book, and then we actually send new product managers. He does a 2-day training that I highly recommend, and we send all of our product managers to it just to understand his kind of framework for how he thinks about product management, which I prefer over pragmatic marketing, although I'm happy for people to disagree with me. But the key learnings for his book is really about the incorporation of UX as an important partner in the discovery process. We didn't have UX at ReturnPath back when we first started engaging with Marty, probably in 2009, 2010. And so we built out UX team and really hired up there, as well as he's really big on experimentation and getting quicker to through the process so that you get to the best product as quickly as possible.
Very good. And for listeners, UX is not just about digital products. It's that user experience, and that can work just as well in a physical product. And how does the user interact with it? And then what's their experience like? And you also mentioned Escape Velocity from Jeffrey Moore. And we both talked about Running Lean from Asha Mariah.
Also good tools for a new product manager. And as listeners know, this is kind of at the end of the interview, and I always like to ask for an innovation quote and why you chose it and why it's important to you.
Sure. So mine is judge a man by his questions rather than his answers by Voltaire. And the reason that I like this quote is that it's really about the process of creating products and discovery and experimentation is really about getting to the right questions to ask, not the right answers. And you'll get the right answers and you'll get the right products, but only if you start with the right questions. And so I think that's really powerful.
Absolutely. And it fits well with your customer discovery and lean startup kind of perspective on how you create products. Must be why you liked it.
Exactly. Exactly. I definitely have a point of view.
Just to wrap up, what do you want to leave listeners with? Want to make sure this interview is a win for you. And how can people follow your work and pay attention to what your company's doing too?
Sure. So they can visit returnpath.com. We have blogs there, and sometimes we blog about product. Or you can follow me on LinkedIn. I'm linkedin.com/in/Jeremy Dillingham.
Okay, very good. linkedin.com/in/Jeremy Dillingham. So Jeremy, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and learning from your experiences.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to all the everyday innovators who listen to and share this podcast. If you listen on iTunes, please leave a star rating or a review. And also find the show notes and details of the discussion at theeverydayinnovator.com/036. Thanks to Product Innovation Educators, your one source for online product management and innovation training.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.